number 03-3520. Great Western Casualty Insurance Company against National Casualty Insurance Company. Mr. Calamaris.
Mr. Calamaris, I must say I've seen counsel shake hands after an argument, but that's the first time I've seen two counsel pat each other on the back coming up. That's really nice to see.
Well, Judge, thank you, and good morning to you all. We're all on good terms. We try and take seriously the civility issue, and we find ourselves on cases together and oftentimes arguing each other's positions on different days. So it's a good place to be, I think. May it please the court, then we'll proceed. We bring this case to you today regarding an omnibus provision in a trucking matter. And this is a dispute between two trucking companies, so normal placard public policy issues don't come into play. I believe we're here because Judge McKinney accepted what I think has become a false premise with regard to Indiana law regarding the question of conditional sales agreements or things that even resemble conditional sales agreements. I think Judge McKinney said right out of the bat, it's a longstanding law in Indiana that in conditional sales agreements, ownership passes at the time the deal is struck. And it actually says ownership and control, I think is what he says in his opinion.
Can you identify any Indiana state case in which the retention of control over the vehicle by the seller in a conditional sale contract rendered the purchaser a permissive user?
No such court case that I know of. But I'm not in dispute that can or cannot be decided. What I wanted the judge to do, and I don't honestly believe he did, was weigh the pile of sticks and see how it comes out. In this case, I think I put forth 12 or 13 different specific indicia of ownership. The statute regarding the Financial Responsibility Act is not dispositive. It's just another stick. And if you look at each of the Indiana cases, including the last time the circuit looked at the two, what have the judges gone and done? They've looked at each of those things and then concluded it either falls one way or the other. Well, in this case, I don't believe that happened. I think the court said, well, it's longstanding that ownership passes and control passes, and therefore it's done. The only question is whether or not the deal was struck. I agree the deal was struck.
This isn't a conditional sales contract. It's got to be a lease, doesn't it?
Well, Judge, it can be a lot of things.
That it's a lease or what?
I mean, this Judge, this court of all knows the freedom and power to contract, and you can contract all kinds of things. That's one of the reasons why I don't think that when you look at the statute, you can't say, oh, the statute simply controls, because the conduct of the parties suggests something different. And that's where I'm in dispute with the court, because I simply say, look, there are too many things that you did not consider at all that you should have considered, even if you come to the same conclusion. You needed to have looked at these things, and you didn't. And you needed to have looked at these things both from a question of ownership and the question of hire. I mean, when we go even to the USF&G case, we get into this big, long discussion about what? About control. And I would expect that the court would want to say, all right, here's our pile of sticks, and here's how they relate. In this case, it extends beyond even Indiana law. I really didn't get into much of discussion beyond Indiana law. But if you do, for example, go to the ALR cited by the appellees, you'll see even more strong language about the question of control. I think the Arkansas ones were the floweriest when they said absolute control and dominion over the subject matter of the sale, unconditional possession. Well, that's not what we have here. We have conditional possession. We have a lot of things where Lynn Elevator said this is what you can do with this truck. And you can only do this stuff with this truck. You have to show up every day and see if we've got a load that you will take. these are the only drivers you can have in this thing. They could have taken their placards off, as an example. And again, I don't say placards are dispositive in this case because, again, we're between carriers, not between an injured party and the carriers. But it's an indicia of what the deal was. And the thing that I think is important is that the courts look and say, here is the deal. And what we measure by examining each of these facts is that there is so much power and so much control vested in Lynn Elevator that this is not an ordinary passing of control and possession. And again, the word control shows up in every one of these cases. In every one of these cases, they go through the process of weighing these elements. And in this case, what do we have? For example, this truck doesn't even reside with the Bogues anymore. This case went back to Lynn Elevator. Lynn Elevator has the truck again. From beginning to the end, there are each and every element that suggests that the court should have sat down and said, these things weigh in favor of putting ownership with the seller.
Well, one of them, for instance, you mentioned is the maintenance of insurance. Now, the holder of a security interest in property, which would be the case if this were a conditional sales contract, frequently requires the maintenance of insurance or provides for it, don't they?
That's right. And what they usually say is that the purchaser will provide the insurance, but that the seller has the right to provide insurance, and in the effect that the purchaser doesn't have insurance, that they can deduct that from the payment. But that wasn't the deal here. The deal here was that the seller will maintain the insurance. Let's look, too, at the deal itself between the buyer and the seller. If Bogue, as the purchaser, had intended to insure this vehicle on his policy, as opposed to the Great West policy, he wouldn't have been paying Lynn Elevator for Lynn Elevator to then keep the placement with Great West. The only reason why there's coverage on this accident is because there was a newly acquired trailer, and there was trailer coverage. And because there was trailer coverage and this is the power unit that was attached to the trailer, that's where there would be coverage. If we accept Great West's proposition here, the only time Great West would ever cover this vehicle is under placard liability when they're either not hauling a load at all or hauling an uninsured trailer. With that, I would pass over to my colleague to pass in reserve.
Thank you, Mr. Calamaros. We'll hear now from Mr. Farrell.
May it please the court, notwithstanding National Casualty's attempt to make it otherwise, this case involves the application of an undisputed material fact, which is the conditional sale of the tractor, to an established rule of law that has been applied in Indiana for over 50 years. Rule of law is that Bogue is now the tractor's owner, and Lynn has no further right to give Bogue permission to use it, which means that Bogue cannot be a permissive user of the tractor under Lynn's auto liability policy with Great West.
Could we talk about the Emmons case for a minute? Because you rely on that case. And I think the facts are different. Because here we have delivery of possession, but not necessarily control. I don't understand why Emmons helps you, because there you had Johnson delivering possession and control of the car to Emmons on a particular date pursuant to a particular contract.
Well, Your Honor, here the tractor was delivered and control was delivered over.
Not necessarily control.
Well, it depends on how you define control. But certainly, in this case, Bogue took possession of the tractor. And I think if you were to look at the case of Royal Indemnity Insurance, it has an interesting sentence in it about control. And it says in that case, the seller was an inert. Inert could not use the car, nor could it give its consent or permission to anyone else to use it. And I think it's instructive. So when you think about Lynn Elevator's position, its position, as Judge McKinney in the court below said, is that it negotiated favorable contract terms under the sales contract. Now, as
I mean, it's really amazing because who could drive it?
Well, that's what I was going to get to.
And what it can be, I mean, who can use it and what it can be used for?
Well, that's what I was going to get to, Your Honor. In this case, while Lynn extracted some favorable conditions, I would say, for instance, the condition that we have the right of first dispatch. That doesn't mean we use the tractor. Bogue continues to use the tractor because Bogue has an ongoing business relationship with Lynn, which is how, in part, how Bogue pays Lynn for the tractor. It's tantamount, Your Honor, to when somebody sells a business and they put in a non-compete clause. It's a favorable term of a contract, favorable to the vendor, maybe not favorable to the vendee, and I suppose you could say, well, that's maintaining control. But the fact of the matter is, once that conditional sales contract is executed, possession has passed, and under Indiana law, which I think everyone will concede, is quite clear both by the statute of Indiana Code Section 1913-2-121B1, and also under the case law, that once the conditional sales contract is executed, possession is passed, and while the seller may continue to use that vehicle, and the seller, not use the vehicle, excuse me, while the seller may attempt to maintain control over it, the rights of ownership have definitely passed on to the buyer. And in this case,
no one seeing this truck would ever think that the buyer owned that truck. It displayed Lynn Elevator signage, a placard, permit. It carried only its operating authority. I don't think I've ever seen a case where there was so much control.
Well, Your Honor, I understand the point.
I mean, they couldn't even haul for a competitor. I mean, they couldn't. And at any time, they could be told, stop doing whatever you're doing and get right over here. We need you. The fact that that may not have happened, I don't think, you know, is as probative as the fact that it could happen.
Well, I think there are factors that militate for the other side, because Lynn never did take the tractor back, never drove it again, and Gabriel Bogue was the only one who ever drove the tractor after the sale was executed. And the idea of giving permission is of interest to me, and back to the Royal Indemnity versus Shoe case, where it says that the seller could not use the car, nor could it give its consent or permission to anyone else to use it. I think if you were to put yourself in the position of Lynn Elevator in this case, they couldn't give permission to another party, not Bogue. They couldn't say, Mr. Farrell, you can use our tractor. And that's exactly what the Royal Indemnity versus Shoe case is talking about. What we have here, Your Honor, is favorable sales conditions to the seller. And it's obvious why there were favorable sales conditions, an ongoing business relationship between the two parties in which Lynn Elevator obviously had greater bargaining power than the buyer. So Lynn Elevator exerted its leverage and extracted favorable conditions, but nevertheless transferred full possession and rights of ownership to this tractor. That's what the case law is about. It's not about who's trying to exert their control. It's about whether that right of ownership did pass.
Conceptually, if it's not a conditional sales contract, it's got to be a lease, isn't it? Is that right?
In my position, it is a conditional sales contract. I'm not sure that anyone has ever called it a lease.
Well, what other alternative is there?
I'm not sure. National Casualty goes on to make its hired auto theory, which does not call for a different result. I think it's rather tortured reasoning for Bogue to say that Lynn sold a tractor to Bogue and then Bogue hired it back. and there's no authority cited by Bogue for the proposition that it would like the courts to enforce. The evidence is undisputed that Lynn had nothing to do with Gabe Bogue's trip on the day of the accident. So obviously the tractor wasn't hired that day when this accident occurred. And in a practical real-world application, hired auto is typically one that is leased by a motor carrier. And although Lynn has its own motor carrier operating authority, there's no evidence it ever leased any truck from Bogue. Typically, when this sort of transaction takes place, the motor carrier hires the other motor carrier to do business for it. It doesn't hire the truck itself. It would be incongruous to think that a shipper such as Lynn Elevator might fit into the shoes of would hire the carrier's truck and then give the carrier permission to use it. The carrier's truck, by virtue of the sale, to use that tractor however it sees fit. The hired auto theory is thus unsupported by relevant evidence or legal authority, and the district court was correct in disregarding it. The real case, R-I-E-H-L, was cited as favorable to the opposition in this case, but I think the real case presented facts that are distinguishable from the facts in our present case. In that situation, the seller owed a lending company quite a bit of money for the vehicle, and because the seller was in dire financial circumstances, the lending company would not let the seller make a conditional sales agreement and forced itself into the equation. I think that distinguishes it from the case at present because there is no lender involved in this case and there was no dire financial circumstances redounding here. Admittedly, it's a close case, but I do believe it is distinguishable. I would just ask that the court uphold the district court's opinion in this case, and I will yield my opponent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Farrell. You have 3 minutes, Mr. Calamaro.
Let me just hit on the critical points. I think Mr. Farrell makes an excellent argument for why Cressy would suggest if you don't find it's an owned vehicle, it's a hired vehicle. We need to accept something here that I think that Great West is not particularly interested in accepting, and that is this is a unique deal. I mean, just as both of you have trouble finding an explanation for what this transaction is, that's my point. It is that the statute itself won't control. It'll just be one stick in the pile. Because why? Because we have terms that are clearly different than the ordinary dispatch of a conditional sales agreement. This is something different. And the reason why each court before has weighed the elements is so that we can take into account this transaction. Now, it may seem like this is sort of an odd deal, but and as far as the interesting thing when he indicated that real isn't the way most trucking situations are, I'd beg to differ. That's exactly why Lynn Elevator holds on to this truck so closely and insures it, because this is an owner-assisted finance, almost your classic rent-to-own thing, and that's why they keep such great control. These are big truck rigs, and truckers are dependent on those people who give them work. And yet, Elevators, this long relationship, Lynn Elevator wanted to see this trucker advance and to own this truck because it's their used truck, it's played off of their books. But at the same time, they don't want to lose their interest. And they did take it back. This truck does reside back in Lynn Elevator's yard. It does not reside with Bogue's anymore.
Is that in the record?
Yes, ma'am, it is. I forget exactly. It's at the bottom of one of my pages my brief, but I honestly don't remember what page it's on.
No, but I mean it's...
It came from an affidavit of Ray Bogue, I believe.
Thank you.
It is the uniqueness of this transaction that requires us to weigh the evidence. And its importance is that this very transaction is going on all over the trucking industry between shippers and their well-loved drivers. And if, in fact, this case does not apply, and that this coverage that they buy and to cover these vehicles that they're distributing, they're driving. If that coverage doesn't exist, then we need everyone to know that so that this type of transaction does not continue. Of course, I would argue the other way, that it's happy as it is, but thank you for your time today.
Thank you, counsel. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We have finished the call of the day, so the court will rise until the next regularly scheduled oral argument.